No matter where you live in the world, we have people from several corners of the world that are watching and listening in. If you look at the headlines of today's news and you're sick of it, then join the club, because no matter where you live on the face of the earth, there is plenty of bad news to go around. And I think most of you probably figured it out, but it's probably much worse than you've even imagined, and the sources of the bad news are even more diabolical than you could have ever imagined 5 or even 10 years ago. As to why we are in the position exactly in history as we are now. So if you're sick of it, and by the way, let me emphasize this, you don't know the half of it and how bad it is, but if you're sick of what you do see, then join the club, because it can be very disturbing and very depressing. Most of us know kind of what is happening, and sometimes we know a little bit about what's behind the scenes. And that's an advantage. That's a great advantage to have, to kind of know in advance, this is the way of man, and this is the way he's going, this is exactly why things are happening in the way that they are. But still, it would be great to have some good news once in a while, wouldn't it? You know, we have good news within the Church of God. We have good news sometimes that people stand up for the right in the world, and that is great when it happens, and it just stands out so much because it's so rare. It is so rare that something good happens, that somebody does something good. I mean, it's not rare, but in terms of all the bad things and all the bad people that are out there working behind the scenes to execute evil plans, those things that are good, even though they may be very frequent, are really relatively small by comparison to all the bad that is going on. So it would be great to have good news, would it not? And we can have good news. And all of you have opportunity to have good news every day. If you at least make an effort, an attempt to look for it and to find the good news and the encouraging news and the encouraging information, such as the information that was presented, you know, by Paul to Philemon, as Mr. Horchak mentioned in the sermonette, really, really good news about somebody overcoming, and that's great. But as members of the body of Christ, it's essential that you focus a little bit at times and look forward to the future to find the good news. Now, if you find good news that is happening in the world today, then celebrate it. Be happy about it and know that it does happen. And I'll explain why it does in just a little bit. But today, let's look at what the world will become, okay? Because that's where really positive good news resides. But before I get to that, just very briefly, how did we get to this place where we are, nearly at the end of 6,000 years? Why are we where we are today, where, as you know, most of what we see that happens all around us is very negative and very illicit and problematic and difficult to ascertain? And you know, as I've said before, you're good people. You're motivated by the Spirit of God. And it is hard for you to understand why people could act in evil ways, even though you have been called by God. It is hard for you. How could they do that? I mean, Terry, hi Terry. Terry has got her office set up. Those of you who've been over the house know she's got her office set up in the dining room kitchen area where she's got her desk and everything. And right in front of her is a 65-inch screen or 70-inch screen TV. And she'll, you know, have the news operating in the background. And I'm minding my own business in my office, which is in a separate part of the house. And she'll storm in and she says, "How could he do that?" You know, relative to some politician or somebody doing something that is just totally outrageous. She never had that opportunity while she was working at an office to watch and listen to the news as much. But it's in the background. She's concentrating on her work. But then when something catches her eye, then she's really, really, really very alarmed. And we all are alarmed when we see these things. So let's turn to Genesis chapter 3. Why are things the way they are? And why have things been going downhill for almost 6,000 years, if you understand, if you believe in the 7,000-year plan of God, and you realize that, you know, this is, let's just say, this is day one of the 6,000 years. This is the very beginning after God created the heaven and earth and then created human beings and, you know, brought them along. And then we know the bad mistake that Adam and Eve, first Eve, then Adam made in taking of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You know all about that. But then take a look at the curse that was exercised upon them in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 7. Now, after all of this, this humiliating problem that took place with the deception of our ancestors, our ancient ancestors, every single one of us, Adam and Eve, and the mistake that they made, we notice in verse 17, "Then to Adam he said, because you have heeded the voice of your wife," and if you ladies want to know why sometimes it's difficult to get your husband to respond, then this may be the reason. Just kidding. It's a joke. Shouldn't joke about a sensitive issue. "Because you have heeded the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat of it, cursed is the ground for your sake. In toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life." Now, this is the world that you were born into. And there are many different ways to understand this in present day life. But since you were born into it, you accept it. You accept the fact, and you know, I mean, before you were even called, before you ever knew anything about the Bible, you just accepted the fact that, hey, things are tough. The world is tough, and even, you know, for some of you amateur gardeners, we've got a few here that are really gung-ho gardeners, and I used to be when I lived in South Dakota, had, you know, great garden raised beds, all kinds of fruit and vegetables, but for those of you that are raising food on just a very minor scale, how challenging is it? And, you know, that doesn't even take into account the difficulty that farmers have. You know, Paul Harvey once had a great soliloquy on, you know, God bless the farmers. Many of you probably heard about that and how hard they work and how exhausting it is to be a farmer. And I spent, you know, a good part of my life and ministerial career among a bunch of farmers up in South Dakota who are in the church. And, you know, I say amen to that. But you take it for granted that you're going to have pests to deal with, and then I mean, you can try to do all these natural things to try to eliminate them, and sometimes they work a little bit, and then those pests come back with a vengeance, and, you know, then I've had people tell me, oh, your soil is healthy, then you won't have any pests, you won't have any weeds, and that's dumb. That is not true, because you are fighting stuff no matter how beautiful and how you put compost into your soil and how natural you try to do things. Even as a little tiny gardener with, you know, like 7,000 or 5,000 or 500 square feet to garden, it's almost impossible to fend them off. And because of this curse, you're fighting an uphill battle. And everybody does. You've got thorns and thistles. None of that stuff existed in the Garden of Eden. But because they decided to take things into their own hands and decide for themselves what was right and wrong, that's basically what they did, being influenced heavily by the devil, of course, this was the curse. So in toil, you shall eat it. So I don't care, okay, all you natural gardeners that are listening, you know, from all over the world, I don't care what you do, you're going to have a problem. You're going to have difficulty in this life. And you and I are subject to it just like anybody else. Just because you're in the church, I don't even care if you keep the land Sabbath and do all the things that you're supposed to do that God outlined to Israel, because we had farmers in the church that kept the land Sabbath. And did they have weeds? Yeah, they had weeds that they had to contend with. Was it a horrible thing? No, I mean, just like everybody else. So you're faced with a compromise. You use these poisons to kill the insects, and then that gets into the food, and then that causes all kinds of health problems later on. Or do you just not have any food to eat at all? You can go out, even because of the lack of rain that we've had on the east side. I've got a little small flower garden. But even with a little lack of rain, caused by you know who, in our area of town, curse, weeds spring up like magic, like overnight. It's like you can't win. So cursed shall be the ground for your sake. In toil you shall eat it all the days of your life. This is the way it's going to be, buddy. Life is going to be hard. Both thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the herb of the field. Yeah, you're going to be able to raise it, but in the sweat of your face you shall eat bread, which leads me to believe that it shouldn't be that hard. It shouldn't be that much of an obstacle. Till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for dust you are, and dust you return. And we just accept it. Because, and all of us do, even those that have been called to the church of God, you know that it's going to be tough. And it doesn't matter whether it's farming or business or whatever. I mean, trying to eat out a living sometimes is just very, very difficult. Growing food is not going to be impossible because you're going to live, but it's going to be hard. You're going to have weeds, you're going to have devouring insects, you're going to have blight, you're going to have lack of rain in due season. So we come up with irrigation. And in Arizona, of course, you know that. And everywhere, you know, I believe that that's the explanation of the prophecy that says one city will go to another for water and everything. We got this massive construction project that took place 40 years ago, the Arizona Canal Project, ACP or AP, whatever it is. Anyway, CAP, yeah, thank you, that goes through the state of Arizona. They pump water uphill. And then it comes finally to Tucson, which is a little bit higher in the southern part of the state than, let's say, Phoenix or where they're pumping it from in the Colorado River. And they pump it all the way up here, and you can see the canals in Arizona. You can see them in Phoenix. And to solve this issue of, hey, there's not enough water, and we've got more people moving here, and then they mine it. They put it back into the groundwater supply. And then it used to be when, you know, that causes all kind of problems, too, because when we first moved here, we didn't have CAP water. And you know, I told Terry when we first moved here in 1988, we had this water with this aquifer that's about 300 feet down, and whatever the water is, it's kind of filtered by 300 feet of sand. I said, man, this tastes like spring water. It's pretty good. It's really, really pretty good water. And at that time, Tucson had a reputation for having excellent tasting water. It was very pure. Now they've mixed in all this stuff, and it has lots of minerals in it, and, you know, it corrodes your sink and all of your dishwashers and your clothes washers and everything else after a while. It's just a mess. And so we don't have rain in due season in many parts. We've got great droughts sometimes that are cyclical that go on and so forth. It's just a mess. So, and all of this comes from choosing of the knowledge of the tree, of the knowledge of good and evil, rather. So it defines the world, and it shows us why there is good and there is bad. There's just not enough good to go around. And so if you want really good news, you've got to focus on Bible prophecy. And, you know, a lot of the prophecies that, you know, admittedly I've focused on is a warning to people. And I've spent a lot of time on focusing on the prophecies that are going to be fulfilled right up to Christ's return. But today we're going to do something a little bit different. And we're going to talk about, what are the headlines of tomorrow? What are the headlines of tomorrow? Here's one. Let's begin with this. The date for this headline is 6500. 6500. Put that down as the date. The headline is Worldwide Restoration Nearing Completion. Turn to Revelation chapter 20 and verse 11. Revelation 20 and verse 11. The headline is Worldwide Restoration Completed or Nearing Completion. I'll be kind of short on really technical explanations of this particular verse, but the subhead of this headline is 20 generations after Christ's return, the next project is outlined, : preparing for the great resurrection. Preparing for the great resurrection. So in Revelation chapter 20, And verse 11, we're even going past this headline date, because we're nearing like 69:99, coming up to this particular point. But in Revelation 20 and in verse 11, it says, "Then I saw a great white throne and him who sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away. There was found no place for them." You know why? Because they don't exist anymore. 2 Peter 3 details why. Because eventually there's not going to be flesh anymore. There's not going to be physical and material. Everything will be spirit. But before that, there has to be a great resurrection. And that means that everybody who has ever lived has to have an honest, good opportunity to choose to enter into that kingdom, which is described in chapter 21 and 22, which is eternity. To reside with God, where God will be with them and live with them forever. And then he makes all things new, as the next chapter describes. But verse 12 says, "I saw the dead," or those who had been dead, "both small and great, standing before God." Now, those are the individuals that have chosen life. They have chosen, unlike Adam and Eve, they have chosen to partake of the tree of life, after they've had a good opportunity to understand the difference between the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, which is symbolic, obviously, and the tree of life, which just means accepting God's gift for salvation. Look, do you want to live forever or do you want to die? Because that's basically what it comes down to. Now, those of you that are here, and many of you who are listening, have chosen life. You want to live forever. As fantastic as that sounds. So this is those individuals who would not be able to stand before God. They're in the resurrected phase, and they have chosen, after living a physical life over again, after being resurrected to a physical life, have said, "Yes, that is what I want." And then in the rest of the verse, it says, "There were dead who are judged according to their works." I don't know about you, but I don't want to be a judge according to my works, because my works are, as in comparison, filthy rags, as it says in the prophecy. And so the end of that is eternal death, or just non-existence. The headline I've already given to you. Here is the text of the article. "Today, in a worldwide transmission, Jesus Christ reviewed the great plan to bring back to life everyone who lived and died during the first 6,000 years since the creation of Adam and Eve. With all the advancement in the first 500 years of the millennium in understanding of genealogy, the ever-expanding human population is excited and sobered in the anticipation of meeting their ancestors. Jesus reminded everyone listening that we have another 500 years to prepare for the arrival of up to 100 billion individuals, but the time is going to pass quickly, so let's use it wisely. Our great God designated Abraham, father of the faithful, as project manager, ensuring that conditions will be conducive for those resurrected at the last day. Assisting Abraham will be Noah, who will be able to relate to everyone who lives again with his knowledge on both sides of the flood. At least they'll be better off than we were when we walked out of the ark," said Noah. "We'll have the earth ready for their arrival." Anticipating question, Jesus noted that there will be plenty of room for everyone who has ever lived. Now that oceans don't cover 70% of the entire world, and deserts have been transitioned to farmlands and prairies, there's going to be plenty of room for the expected resurrection. Jesus reminded everyone, "You are the light of the world," quoting himself. "Much of their success will depend on your example." The King of Kings also announced the appointment of his good friend Lazarus, who had experienced a resurrection from physical death, as special envoy to help everyone connect with family members from their past, the future, and those who are now members of God's spiritual family. Very few people know what it is like to die and be resurrected to life, said Jesus. But Lazarus will also count on the hundreds of saints who came out of the grave when I was crucified, as well as others raised from the dead. Elijah and Paul, both on stage during the announcement, nodded in agreement, each acknowledging the special opportunity of this physical resurrection. Paul said, Elijah and I were granted by God the opportunity to raise one person back to life. It's exciting to think about this massive resurrection, said Paul. After the conference, other members of the God family, specifically Ezekiel, reflected on the future time. He said, I was astounded over 3,000 years ago when God revealed to me the resurrection of the dead. And you can read about that vision in chapter 37 of me. You'll remember that the King of Kings revealed to me at that time that he would make a covenant of peace with them and looking forward past the white throne judgment, that the tabernacle of God would be with them. Coincidentally, next to Ezekiel was John. He motioned to his friend John. He says, of course, John was given a similar vision in chapters 21 and 22 of Revelation. There are a lot of other recollections and instruction given by many of the prophets and the 12 apostles, as well as Jacob, who is asked to help organize the tribes of Israel in the geographical areas as Christ has instructed when they are all resurrected. As we move a little bit earlier in time and move back towards the time just after Christ's return, what would be some of the headlines of the world in the news then? All right, let's go to date 6001. And let's look at a headline from just in the, you know, who knows, 5, 10, 15 years into the future? I don't know. World Education Initiative announced. Turn to Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 1. Isaiah 2 and verse 1. World Education Initiative announced. From Jerusalem. The city and surrounding areas are anticipating the arrival of millions from all over the earth to further their education in the Bible. Many had had no teaching on that topic of God's laws prior to Christ's return. But now that Satan has been put away, removing the cloak of deception that had been over all mankind, many people from all over the world have begun to recognize that those who are obeying the Ten Commandments are achieving God's blessings. They see others are happy and they want that same kind of life. Jesus Christ announced to the entire world that everyone was welcome to come to Jerusalem for the first Feast of Tabernacles to be taught about what to expect for the next 1,000 years. And we read of some of the storyline in chapter 2 of Isaiah in verse 1. The word that Isaiah the son of Amoz saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. Now it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain being a synonym for government, the government of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains, or smaller governments, and all governments, and shall be exalted above the hills. And all nations shall flow to it. Many people shall come and say, come, and let us go up to the mountain, or let us go to the government of God. Let's go to Jerusalem. Let's find out what this is all about to the house of the God of Jacob. He, Christ, will teach us his ways, and we shall walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. When multiple millions of people on earth heard those words, they were excited that this prophecy was being fulfilled in them at that time. Reports are that they're so eager to go home after the feast and help explain to others in their towns and to families what they have learned. And then the good news, the kingdom of God will be spread in that manner. Now let's move a few years up, maybe 6002 or 6003, and I'll ask you to turn to Zechariah chapter 14. Zechariah chapter 14 and verse 16. Next to the last book in the Old Testament, the last chapter. The substance of the story reads as this: many nations are overjoyed that the nation of Egypt will travel to Jerusalem to keep their first Feast of Tabernacles. Dateline, maybe 6002, maybe 6003, several years into the reign of Christ. Many nations are overjoyed that the nation of Egypt will travel to Jerusalem to keep their first Feast of Tabernacles. Most nations have been keeping the holy days for several years now, but Egypt was one of the last holdout nations. They had to learn the hard way that if a nation does not obey God, then raising crops and livestock is next to impossible. Some of the Egyptians had apparently believed that since they lived in the fertile crescent of the Nile basin, that they would have all the water they needed to grow crops and for their livestock. But just as God had promised, God withheld the rain from lower regions of the Nile River and all areas that drained into the Nile without affecting obedient nations, and the Nile dried up. With the repentance of the Egyptian people in place, Joseph was dispatched to Egypt, as he was thousands of years ago, to bring millions of tons of grain and other needed foodstuffs in thousands of ships from the coast of Israel to stave off what would have been mass starvation of the Egyptian people. As Egyptians were making plans for keeping the feast, a gentle rain began to fall on their nation, the first in 3 years since Jesus had returned to earth. Read now with me in Zechariah chapter 14 and verse 16, "And it shall come to pass that everyone who is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall go up from year to year to worship the king, the Lord of hosts, to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And it shall be that whichever of the families of the earth do not come up to Jerusalem to worship the king, the Lord of hosts, on them there will be no rain. If the family of Egypt will not come up and enter in, they shall have no rain. They shall receive the plague with which the Lord strikes the nations who do not come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. This shall be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all the nations that do not come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles." So one way or another, they will learn. Now this is, I believe, a conditional prophecy. It is not ironclad. We can hope that this prophecy doesn't have to be fulfilled, because it doesn't. Because at the return of Jesus Christ, if all people, no matter where they live, whether it's in Egypt or wherever, if they obediently come to the Feast of Tabernacles and decide to obey God's laws, then there won't be a need to enforce this. But it will be a constant reminder throughout the 1,000 years of what could happen if people become slack in their obedience to God. So that is something that we'll just have to wait and see if this headline actually comes to fruition, but it's a possibility. So if they are obedient, then on the future newspaper or the telecast of the world tomorrow, this one will just simply disappear and won't be broadcast. Date, 9th month, year, 6,000. Headline, new language announced. Turn to Zephaniah chapter 3 and verse 9. A few pages back to Zephaniah 3 The story reads, "Today from Jerusalem, Jesus Christ announced the introduction of a new language which will eliminate many of the problems associated with the world's languages that go all the way back to the Tower of Babel. Quote, I'm following through on my promise to restore a pure language that will help everyone communicate with me in a more effective manner, said Jesus. Now, in this particular story, it shows that this new language will begin right after Jesus Christ's return. Everyone on earth will now be able to worship and communicate with me with clarity, with expression of pure thoughts, and the problems associated with former languages will not be incorporated into the new language. Jesus went on to say that this initiative wasn't just for the purpose of having a common language, because that failed at the Tower of Babel after the flood, but that it will help man to direct his steps and his actions with sincerity of purpose and a desire to obey God. Some quick learners in Jerusalem excitedly remarked that their newfound linguistic skill in the new language was helping them grasp their Bible reading more clearly and quickly. Printers in every city around the world are having a tough time keeping up with the demand for the new King of Kings translation of the Bible. In virtually every major capital on earth, citizens have begun the transition to the pure language. They don't want to be left behind as the rest of the world progresses toward a language that makes it easier to practice Philippians 4, verse 8, which says, and I'll cite for you, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things of great good report, if there's any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. A Chinese citizen was overheard to say, and I'm translating this into English for you, by the way, just so you'll know. It's amazing. I didn't realize how much of our language hindered our thinking and outlook in so many ways. I'm more positive, hopeful, and I'm in a good frame most of the time now. So when we read in Zephaniah chapter 3 and verse 9, for then I will restore to the peoples a pure language, that they may call on the name of the Lord to serve him with one accord. That will be the great result of this new language. People will be happier. They'll be able to communicate. There won't be any of the bad words associated with virtually every one of man's language. There won't be any confusion as nations try to reach out and speak to one another. Now, here's a dateline, and there's no specific year because this could actually happen anywhere on the globe, and it could happen anytime during the 6,000 years. The headline is, New Zoo to open. Turn to Isaiah chapter 11 and verse 6. Isaiah 11 and verse 6. Here's a headline pulled from the future that on the surface seems like, you know, maybe inconsequential, but for younger people, little kids, it's going to be great. And if it happens well into the millennium, this will just be a normal, common occurrence of everyday life. But for the people who are transitioning from this age to the next age, it is going to be unbelievable for them to see this happen. The story reads, parents, children, and animal lovers were pleased to hear that a new petting zoo will open in their own community. Unlike zoos of the previous world, there will be no need of cages or fences, as bears, lions, gorillas, elephants, hippos, crocodiles, alligators, and many other species roam amongst each other and the patrons. Many formerly carnivorous animals, along with sheep, cattle, and some small children, were even seen napping together at noontime, taking a siesta underneath the shade of a huge tree. So
that indeed will be a sight to see in the world tomorrow. As we read in chapter 11 of Isaiah and verse 6, the wolf also shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the young goat, and the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. The cow and the bear shall graze. Their young ones shall lie down together. This reminds me of a video that somebody posted on one of the social media sites where a cow raised from birth along with dogs basically thought it was the father to all of these dogs. There's dozens of them roaming around. And the dog actually thought it, or the cow actually thought it was a dog, and then it got bigger and bigger. And as the little puppies and as the little dogs are racing through the pasture, the cow also thinks it's a dog, and it's traipsing along with all of them. And then they come up, and they're licking the cow's face, and he's licking them back. And it's just an amazing video. And there are some other cute ones out there like that to see, that you can see from time to time. None of them are really that hostile like dogs and ducks, or the duck that raised a stray dog, and then that dog follows the duck around thinking that the duck is its mother and, you know, kind of bonds with it. And there are others, examples that you've seen, but that is only a fraction of the fact that animals are going to have a different spirit. You see, the curse of Genesis 3 is going to be lifted, because the curse on the land is just one thing that is mentioned in terms of what happened with Adam and Eve. Because you'll notice that when God brought all the animals out to Adam to name, he wasn't fearful. Well, yeah, you could say, well, he had God there with him. Those animals did not have a ferocious nature about them when they were first created. That is a part of the curse that took place when man separated himself from God. But when that curse is lifted at Jesus Christ's return, these animals, which were, of course, during our lifetimes, always dangerous, whether they're asps or whether they're lions and tigers, or, of course, there are some of those that they can be trained to be more docile, or they can be drugged up to be more docile, as in 1955, I believe it was, that Herbert Armstrong did a pilot TV program, and they had a lion in the background with a lamb. That lion, you can tell, is all drugged up and sedated so that it's not going to do anything. That you go back into the archives and look at that. It was trying to show a millennial scene, but you just can't really have that. And wild animals and beasts, no matter how much training they have, can become very dangerous, as Siegfried and Roy, the animal tamers, once found out. You probably heard about that story long ago. They used to live with these, you know, walk around in their house, lions and tigers, and I think one of them mauled one of the individuals. It's a very, very sad story. But at any rate, one parent expressed that animals hadn't been this tame since the time that God brought all the animals to Adam and asked him to name them. Okay, let's move on. Dateline, after Jesus' return. After Jesus' return. The headline is, surplus materials repurposed in massive recycling program. Turn to Micah chapter 4. And verse 3. The headline is, surplus materials repurposed in massive recycling program. Micah chapter 4 and verse 3. The story reads, many cities around the globe have set up massive yards where tanks, military vehicles, missiles, fighter jets, cannons, and guns of all types are being smelted. Huh. The raw materials are then utilized to make farm machinery. Even with factories running 6 days a week, of course taking the Sabbath day off, keeping up with the demand for tractors, tillers, harvesters, as well as hand tools has been next to impossible, explained the prophet Amos, a former farmer who has been chosen by Jesus Christ to lead the team dedicated to leading, to teaching farming methods to large numbers of people around the globe who want to be a part of the new growing profession. In Micah chapter 4 and verse 3, we read, "He shall judge between many peoples and rebuke strong nations afar off. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore." There won't be any need for self-defense. There won't be any need for massive armies. There won't be any need to put massive amounts of monies from the budgets of nations around the world into defense. It simply won't be in the nature of man to harm others ever again, except for one brief time, which we will not cover today. Which leads me to a just off-the-cuff comment. I've heard members exclaim their belief that during the millennium, we're going to go back to, I don't know, some time that they think in which technology ruined the world. And that the farms of the future will simply be one-man shows, and everybody will have their own little farm, their fig tree, their grapevine, and everything. And that, you know, with a hoe and a shovel and a pickaxe, you can probably just sustain life and all of that. Well, I don't believe that. Now, neither one of us is going to know who is right until the time happens. But I think it's inconceivable that as inventive as man is, even with the curse that has been placed on all of mankind by him choosing the wrong tree to understand for himself and to decide for himself what is right and wrong, I think it's inconceivable that God would put like a governor on his mind and his ability to do things, because people are inventive. It's like, you know, when you move, if you've ever moved yourself, right, get the U-Haul truck, it's got a governor on it many times, so you can't go past 55, even though it's safe to drive and go 70 or whatever, but you're just stuck there. You got your foot on the pedal and it's floored, but you can't go any faster than that. I submit that I do not think that God is going to put a governor on the ability of man to do things from the right perspective, motivated by love, and just keep him with a shovel to organize his life. So I think, yes, there will be bigger farms. I think that there will be machinery. I think that as inventive and as creative as man has been in this technological age, I think it's going to be even better going forth. Because what some fail to recognize is that it's not technology of and by itself, which is a thing, which is evil. It is the use sometimes of that technology and the bad use of it for wrong purposes and for evil purposes, which is bad. It's like people misapply the passage of money is the root of all evil. It's a root of evil. It's not all evil. It's not the only thing that is evil, but it can be misapplied. But as a tool, it can be rightly used, as hopefully you will know. Now, Dateline, again, pick a year, anytime during the 1,000 years. The headline is Prosperity Includes All. Turn to Micah. Well, we're right there in Micah chapter 4 and verse 4, so you can hold your place there in Micah 4 and verse 4. Families all over the earth have learned that society is no longer structured with first and third world divisions of wealth and prosperity. With all nations obedient to God, everyone is experiencing the abundant blessings. And Micah 4 and verse 4 says, "But everyone shall sit under his vine and under his fig tree, and no one shall make them afraid." Nobody is going to be fearful. Not going to have to worry about locking your doors. I'm not saying it was a perfect time, but when I grew up in the 50s and the 60s, we'd go off for a family vacation. In our little town, truly, they never lock the doors. They never lock the doors, which seems incredible now. The only time you don't lock the door when you leave the house, even for 5 minutes in this society, is if you had a brain fog and you forgot to go back in and check each and every door and rattle it and make sure it's good and tight, knowing above all that that may mean nothing. If somebody is very determined to get into your house, they can get into anything they want to. But you try to come up with enough deterrence so that it's not worth their while. You put cameras on your doorbells, you put, you know, floodlights around your house, you put on motion detectors, and you put cameras in your house to ensure, and yet all of those things are just more and more deterrents. And they're good. I mean, don't stop using those if you have them, because we have them, but it's all going to be unnecessary. Look at all of the things that are going to be so unnecessary that people spend time and money and effort that really restrict man's ability because of a few. Turn to Amos chapter 9. This is a very, very interesting prophecy. Amos chapter 9. The story reads, some news sources reported on a gentle competition between those preparing or trying to prepare fields for planting and those who were still trying to get the previous harvest out of the field. The problem for the harvesters was that there was too much. It was too abundant. They had been blessed too much, catching everybody off guard. Even though they began to get the harvest out of the field on time, the yields were so great that they held up the planters who, after kidding their counterparts that they were lazy, joined in and helped them get the rest of the crops in the field so that the planting season could finally begin. Behold, the days are coming, says the Lord, when the plowman shall overtake the reaper. When you think about the incredible abundance, don't just limit it to the agricultural society, which will have a lot of people applying for jobs in and wanting to have land grants so that they can have their own farm. Apply it to virtually every aspect and every profession in life, that the abundance will be so fantastic that people will not have to worry about making ends meet any longer. They'll be able to concentrate on other things. You know, there's been a struggle ever since Adam and Eve's decision and the curse of the ground. Things have been a struggle. It's hard to make a living. It really is. I don't care what your profession is. If you're going to be good at it, even under the best of circumstances, it can be very, very difficult to navigate, no matter what you do for a living. I'm not saying that all you're going to have to do is put a seed on your thumb and pop it into the air and it'll fall on the ground and sprout. But maybe I am. Maybe that's how easy things are going to be. You're not going to have to put much effort because people are going to learn so much more about God and have so much more time to enjoy their families, so much more time to develop and child rear and develop their own parenting skills, that everything is going to be more and more abundant. And when the scripture says that the government of God will grow and grow and grow, it doesn't mean in bureaucratic forms. It means that the obedience of people will grow so much and that there will be so many blessings, and it will just kind of be like a snowball that begins in a very small size at Mount Everest, and by the time it gets down the entire mountain, it is just like the biggest thing in the world. That is what we're talking about, folks. Verse 14, a little bit closer to the time just after Christ returns, I will bring back the captives of my people Israel. They shall build the waste cities and inhabit them. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of destruction in the future. I mean, we see that all through the book of Revelation. We see the destruction of mankind bent on killing himself, trying to achieve dominance with various powers competing for one another, and then a lot of the destruction as Christ returns and just has to put down that rebellion, even though the constant pleading and the proclamation of the gospel message and telling them to repent and to put down their weapons and don't fight the King of Kings. There's going to be a lot of waste, and there's going to be a lot of work. I mean, for maybe your children, maybe your grandchildren, maybe some of your great-grandchildren, maybe some of your progeny that hasn't even been born yet, there's going to be a lot of work available, and at a good wage. The prosperity is going to be unbelievable, is going to go off the charts. People are going to be stunned, especially many of the people who have transitioned from this age to the next, after they get out of the shell shock of going through the Great Tribulation. It's going to be fantastic. In addition to the agribusiness, there's going to be a lot of work in connection with the thousand-year reign of Jesus Christ, enough for everyone. Now let's go to the final headline. The final headline, the dateline, is today, in this age, and it reads, "Why have you been called now to salvation?" You can see through just the few prophecies that we've gone through today, and I've just gone through a few that are pretty familiar, and there are many, many more. Search them out on your own. You can see that many things are going to change, and we haven't even scratched the surface yet on the headlines of tomorrow. I hope this pleasant change in the future and looking at the future from the drudgery of the present and the bad news, the fake news, the false news, and the real news that is horrible to contemplate in today's world, I hope it's a refreshing change. If you followed along so far, I don't know everybody's length of time within the body that you're listening to now, or those of you that are online, I just don't know. I cannot comprehend what's going on for you inside. But if you are in general agreement and understanding of what has been presented today, or at least the major premise, I believe you're on the right track. Just my opinion. If you believe that this is the reality of the future, then again, my opinion, I believe you are on the right track. I mentioned the names of some of those we know who will be a part of the first resurrection. Abraham. There are so many that I couldn't even mention, you know, Moses and Aaron and Joshua and Caleb and dozens of familiar names. But the question that is more important right now is, do you see yourself in that time and place? Do you see yourself as being a part of that reality that the Bible talks about? Will you be there too? Some of those who hear this message may not even be members of the Church of God. But if this makes sense to you, then there's a good chance your salvation is being offered today. And by today, I mean this age. The question I have for you as a subtitle to this headline is, are you being called to salvation now? If so, you will want to be there when Jesus Christ ascends to the throne of the entire earth. And if so, you will want to help him and maybe see your name in one of those stories that I've presented today, taking some artistic license with the Bible prophecy that we're all familiar with. You'll want to help rule with him for 1,000 years. So whether you are a member or not, Your responsibility is to model the values that are mentioned in these prophecies. The values are God's commandments in your daily life today. You must have a kingdom mentality every day when you wake up. Every day, striving to put God first, be obedient to his commandments, and surrender your life to him. Be there. Be a part of the headlines of tomorrow.